This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast, your audio source for all things Michigan football, basketball, and recruiting. I'm your host, Zach Shaw. Steve Lorenz here with me. We're going to talk through the Michigan football team's 38-17 win at Wisconsin on Saturday. Going to talk about some of my takeaways. And also start to peek ahead toward the rest of October, which could be a very interesting, promising, there's a lot of different words you could use, month for the Wolverines now that they are 5-0 for the first time since 2016. And Steve, I posted my takeaways. To me, the big one, and we'll talk about a couple individual players in a moment, but the defensive performance, this is... that was as good as Michigan has looked defensively. Maybe there was one game in the 2019 season, but I really kind of want to go toward 2018. They allowed 210 yards, many of which came in garbage time, 17 points, including a garbage time touchdown. They had 6 sacks, 29 quarterback pressures, according to Pro Football Focus. I just looked at those numbers, and then I looked at them again because that's just a hard number to fathom. You know, with Wisconsin, I mean, they only attempted 23 passes, I believe. And so to have 29 quarterback pressures is incredible. They held Wisconsin to 43 rushing yards and 1.5 yards per carry, or 1.3 yards per carry, excuse me. Wisconsin's lowest total in either situation since 2015. They forced 3 turnovers. They held Wisconsin to 3 of 14 on 3 and outs. Or on third downs. They forced 7 3 and outs on 13 drives. And Wisconsin only had 2 drives in which they lasted on the field more than 4 plays in the entire game. That is, I mean, you can pick which number is the most significant to you, but to me, I thought it was a really masterclass performance. And to me, that was, you know, there, I guess there was always questions about the passing game and I suppose there still are a couple, but it was always, we have to see what the defense is before we can project what this season will be. You think about Wisconsin last year, a lot of the same guys. I mean, it was Mertz and Berger and Ferguson and Davis and Pryor. I mean, they destroyed Michigan last year. And so for Michigan to put together not just a good performance, but an elite defensive performance, I think that is a tremendous year-over-year growth for the Wolverines. And I think that does raise expectations for Michigan moving forward. What are some of your thoughts on the defense?
First thing I want to say is I don't know what it is about these two teams that, like, every year one of them just beats the hell out of the other one. I think they had the Jordan Lewis interception game, right? Was a close game, but otherwise this is always like a –
that's so true. And it's always billed as, oh, this is going to be a big, you know, ugly matchup that'll come down to the wire. And it never is. You're right. Even that 2016 game, I mean, the score was close, but Michigan missed 3 field goals. Like, they probably should have run away with it a little bit. Yeah, it is funny. Like, one team's just on the floor and the other team's like raising a championship belt.
So, because I want to say the 5, you know, Michigan hadn't won in Madison for however long or whatever. And I think those losses were about like an average of like 15 points. Yeah. So,
but the last 4 were by more. I mean, there was one that was 3 points. So, yeah.
Blowout city usually. So, the most impressive thing to me, I tweeted it. So I hate that I'm like almost repeating this a little bit, but it still is my biggest takeaway was, it's totally fair and reasonable for us to admit that this is not a typical Wisconsin team, talent execution wise offensively, but the yardage numbers you mentioned, what stood out to me is that even when Wisconsin did succeed, it was on the back of like 3 amazing throws from Graham Mertz. It was not as if Wisconsin, that late touchdown, you know, to end the second or end the first half, it was not as if Wisconsin or Michigan had like these major breakdowns defensively that led to those points. I mean, he had to make three amazing throws to Ferguson and two to DK to get those points. And that ended up being what? I mean, how long was that drive? Like 65, 70 yards off the squib?
The touchdown? Yeah, 63 yards in right? 15 seconds.
So that's what, a quarter of their yardage? Maybe a little less than a quarter of their yardage for the entire game. So that's what was most impressive to me. I got to assume that many people going into halftime thought, here we go. Mertz is going to figure it out. Or he's figuring it out. It's just Michigan's luck that the guy who's maybe one of the worst statistical quarterbacks in college football is all of a sudden has like rediscovered whatever magic he had, you know, a calendar year plus ago for a two-game stretch. So the fact that it took plus throws to even move the ball against them, period, and the fact that they responded in the second half, I think right off the bat, I thought was huge. I don't know if anyone out there is just saying, well, you know, if Mertz had been able to finish the game, maybe it's a little bit different. I'm a believer in, if you're creating opportunities for your players to sack the quarterback and not hurt them, but like, you know, to hit them consistently, if a guy
changes how a quarterback plays,
right? And I don't consider that like a fluke break for Michigan. I consider that Michigan's defense just beat the guy up on the other side of the ball, and he couldn't finish the game. You know, obviously hope he's gets better, hope he's fine. And he did play. Mertz looked the best that he's looked all year, which not saying a ton, but still, you know, either way, I felt Michigan really, this was that they earned it. And the other big takeaway, and I don't know if this is where we were going to segue into, and I said this before we got on, I really truly believe that David Ojabo's emergence is the single biggest reason why Michigan could go from being maybe an 8-4 team to a 10-2 or maybe even 11-1 team, just because yesterday was such a good example of how Aiden Hutchinson has such a big impact on the game, even if he's not the guy maybe getting the sack or getting the tackle for a loss. Having that second guy, we've seen Michigan's best defenses under Jim Harbaugh have been when that second edge guy can feed off of the attention that the other one's getting. You know, you talk about Winovich and Gary really being maybe the best example of that. You're kind of starting to see that with Ojabo, who had by far the best game of his career yesterday, but is also kind of emerging as a guy that is making big plays at big points in the game. So to kind of have that Robin to Hutchinson's Batman on the edge, I think it's so valuable, not just for Hutchinson, but even those guys in the middle, you know, to create some space for those guys to operate in the passing game in the pass rush. So can't say enough about how far he's come in a short amount of time. And same with Chris Hinton too, is another guy I think we talked about before we got on, mm-hmm. You know, a guy that the knock on him, even during fall camp, was difficulty getting off blocks, et cetera, et cetera. He's come miles in that part, in that aspect alone this season. Looked excellent against the run yesterday. And another guy who really is maybe kind of finding it. So, a lot of positives for Michigan defensively out of this game, obviously. But also, I remember saying before the game that I thought Dax Hill would have a big game-breaking play. On Saturday, I think he did that with the interception. I mean, Michigan probably was going to win either way, but that was kind of the nail in the coffin, I thought. So,
Back, and so. his pass rushing was really strong. I mean, he played like Michigan fans had really hoped Dax Hill would play this season. Yeah, I think there's a lot of worry among fans that he was going to be off to the draft before he made an impact in a big game, and I guess we'll see how Wisconsin the game ages. But the fact is they were an underdog and he was the best player on the field for much of the game. And so him and Aiden Hutchinson playing up to that draft hype so far. And you mentioned Ojabo. I think that's a fantastic point that we've talked about his elite physical ability for a long time. And he's always been applauded by Michigan coaches and players as an elite pass rusher. I think the question was always, how will he do against the run? Thought he had a great run defense game too. The 2.5 sacks obviously is what people remember, but you know, his ability to recognize kind of, well, I guess just recognize what the play is, you know, so he's not just getting into the backfield for nothing. You know, he understands where to be. I thought he was really good. And I think, you know, you mentioned Hinton. I think Mozzie Smith is worthy of mention. I thought he's had a pretty good season overall, but I thought yesterday he had a really fantastic game. I think he graded out really well according to Pro Football Focus, had, you know, three quarterback pressures, which is a good amount for a defensive tackle like that. But, you know, the thing for me that I saw, and I don't know if this is something that shows on TV, but Michigan rotates its defense a ton. And sometimes they cut it really close with getting guys in position at the right time. But whenever I saw Mozzie Smith rotate in late, he not only knew exactly where to go, he ran really quick. Like, he looked very quick for someone his size, but he never, I did not see once him put his hands on his hips or hands on his knees or like look winded at all. And I'm not just singling him out. I think Michigan's entire defense did that, but that was something that stood out to me, is I was like, man, he's putting in a lot of work, not just between the whistles, but you know, when there isn't a play too, just sprinting on and off the field, depending on the situation and everything. And I think he deserves a lot of praise, you know, for his one on-field production, but two, you know, he's talked a lot about the improved shape that he's in and, you know, kind of how he really took the off season as a serious opportunity. So certainly, I mean, Michigan needed a lot of outliers on defense, a lot of players who didn't step up last year to step up this season. And they're getting a couple of them. I think they've gotten a few in the secondary with Moten, you know, in the linebacker room, Nikhyle Green, Junior Colson, but now you're starting to see it in that defensive front. Cause yeah, 29 quarterback pressures, 6 sacks. Last year they had 9 sacks, period, the whole season. And I think Wisconsin's offensive line is struggling a lot. I think there's going to be some personnel changes and who they start and everything, but still, it's big guys who at one point were viewed very highly and had success last season. So on the offensive side of the ball, I think the big takeaway is they answered a lot of questions. I don't think they answered every question, but everyone wondered what they would look like if the run game wasn't there. Well, the run game wasn't there. They ran 46 times for 112 yards. And that includes pretty much no sacks. You know, that's a legit, like, they were not running the football consistently. I thought they did well. I mean, we talked about Wisconsin before the game. They were only allowing 23 rushing yards per game, and Michigan did a great job avoiding tackles for loss and negative plays, but they only averaged 2.5 yards per carry, still came away with 38 points. Think there was a lot to like about that passing game, Steve. There were some early inaccuracies, and I think I'm always a believer that what happens in the first like 3 drives clouds the impression people have for the rest of the game. And so McNamara was off. I think the receivers were off, and I think the offensive line struggled to pick up some of Wisconsin's blitzers, but altogether they threw for over 250 yards, 3 touchdowns, no sacks, no interceptions. Well, I guess Alan Bowman threw an interception late in the game, but otherwise they really, that's about as good as you're ever going to get against a Jim Leonard coach defense. You know, Wisconsin's got a very good defense. And I thought Michigan's passing game succeeded. And you talk about Ajabo kind of raising the ceiling, raising the potential of Michigan. I think Roman Wilson finding kind of that every down comfort level, you know, where he's not, it's not just speed for him. It's making tough catches. It's creating separation. It's playing physical. I think he's another potential raiser. And he's someone that obviously stood out to me on Saturday. Did they answer, in your mind, the question, can they win without the run? I mean, I know the turnovers helped. I know Michigan had some drives that didn't look so great, but where do you sit with Cade McNamara and this passing game right now?
So I wouldn't say they won without the run. I want to say, I think it was Joel Klatt talked about Michigan a little while after the game and said Michigan ran the ball enough and effectively enough to keep Wisconsin honest. I thought that was a good way to put it, and I thought it was pretty accurate because you think about the touchdown.
That's true, yeah.
You think about the first, you think about the flea flicker. That was totally created by Wisconsin having to respect Hassan Haskins in the running game. I mean, you had both the linebacker and the safety bite on that flea flicker play. I know the flea flicker is a trick play, but still, if Michigan wasn't getting anything running the ball, maybe the safety doesn't bite. I suspect the linebacker probably bites on that play either way, but it opened it up enough for Michigan. So I do think, and especially considering how well, like you said, Wisconsin had slowed the run down coming into this game, I thought Michigan did enough. We didn't go into the game expecting Michigan to run for 200, 300 yards in this game. I think we all kind of assumed that Michigan, if they were going to win, it was going to have to be through the air. And this was kind of the big game to determine where they're at there. For me, I'll just be honest. I mean, we were in the Slack chat and I had questions early on in the game. Timing was off. We've seen McNamara maybe struggle a little bit in under pressure type situations. And then right before the flea flicker, I think I mentioned maybe he's the kind of guy that needs to hit on a big or difficult throw to really maybe kind of get into a rhythm. And that's kind of how it felt like it played out. He hits the flea flicker. And then after that, he was absolutely an asset for Michigan offensively. And I agree though. And Wilson's a guy we've talked a lot about because he was a guy that really didn't get a ton of pub. I know AJ Henning was my big breakout pick. But Wilson, like we always said, started the first game of the year last year as a true freshman, obviously a guy Michigan feels has potential. But his, again, much like it is with Hutchinson, not to the same level, but Cornelius Johnson's a guy I think we know can make plays when asked. I mean, he made two big ones yesterday, but with the kind of waiting with Ronnie Bell out, you know, it was kind of on one of these other guys to really step up and be that second option. I think yesterday was a huge step for Roman Wilson. For young guys like that, and to me, he still is young. They only played the six games last year. It was a weird season. That can be a big confidence builder for him. So overall, yeah, I mean, I think you got to be very happy with McNamara's performance and just Michigan in general at both the wide receiver, quarterback, running backs. I think their offensive line, obviously pass protection has been excellent. And it's encouraging. Again, not the same level of Wisconsin team that maybe we're accustomed to, but defensively anyways, they're at least a plus defense. This is the best defense they've played so far this season. And they at points made it look pretty easy against them. And I think that is predicated on their ability to run the ball. Kind of opens everything up. So overall, I think you got to be encouraged for sure. Absolutely.
To your point about McNamara doing really well after that flea flicker, I have to go back and make sure that it was that exact play, but I believe it, including the flea flicker, at that point he was 4 for 9 for 20 yards. The rest of the game he was 13 for 19 for 177 yards and 2 touchdowns. I mean, that's really good. And to your point about Wisconsin's defense, Sean Clifford, who I would maybe argue is the Big Ten's best quarterback right now, did not have a good game against Wisconsin. He had a worse completion percentage, threw for fewer touchdowns, had a worse passer rating, and had fewer yards per attempt than McNamara did yesterday. Now, is there a case to be made that Wisconsin's playing its season opener a little bit more engaged than maybe when they're 1-2 and they're facing another good team and they're kind of beaten up a little bit? Yeah, maybe there's a case to be made there. But the fact is Wisconsin is not a team that gives up a ton. I mean, they're not the slouch defense by any stretch. That's like the one part of the team that actually is still clicking at a you know, top 10, top 15 level right now. So yeah, I thought I came away pretty impressed with McNamara and the receivers according to Pro Football Focus, they credited or blamed the receivers for 3 drops. Still think there's some issues to work on. You know, we talked about it, I think it was the last episode, you know, without Ronnie Bell. I mean, that was someone that they were really counting on to be like on third down. That's who you're going after. I think they're still working on some of the timing. McNamara threw behind his receivers a couple times. I think the receivers did not create the necessary separation or didn't necessarily create the leverage as the ball was in the air a couple times. So there's still stuff to work on, but I think suddenly those games where you don't anticipate Michigan will run for 200 yards, they look a lot more winnable. And the narrative I think has to go away, because I think there's still questions about McNamara. I liked that they worked McCarthy in there. I think that was really important. But I think the narrative that they don't trust Cade McNamara that's got to go. I mean, for them to call a flea flicker in the end zone, you know, I believe it was still a pretty tight game at that point. And for them to call that when he was 4 of 9, I mean, he was struggling, and they said, you know what, let's do it. And I think the 38 yarder to Roman Wilson on 3rd and 10 was another one. I mean, I don't think Michigan expects McNamara to be a first team all Big Ten quarterback or win the Heisman, but they trust him to make plays to win. I think that narrative, to me, anyone saying that now is just, they're thinking too much. they're putting words in people's mouths and they're putting a little too much stock into their own hunch. I mean, it just, they clearly trust him. And Steve, real quick, a question for you. Any big impressions of Josh Gattis's game plan? I thought it was magnificent. I thought that was kind of what everyone had hoped Gattis would produce. It was creative, but it wasn't creative in a forced way. It was creative to Michigan's talent. I thought it was pretty versatile. I agree with you. I think the run game, you know, those numbers probably look a little bit worse because in the second half, they just, it just wasn't the same kind of rushing attack. But I thought in that first half when, you know, before Corum took that one big hit and, you know, him and Haskins, I thought were doing a really nice job of finding holes. The line was working pretty hard. Your thoughts on Gattis's game plan and maybe similar to McNamara, did he prove a lot of narratives or a lot of critics wrong in this game?
I think to an extent. I mean, so the one that cracked me up was the second fourth down on the first drive where they didn't get it. My only major criticism of McNamara has been not keeping it at all. I thought that was a brilliant play call. If he had just kept he could have gotten 30 yards. It's clear he's not the most nimble of fleet of foot necessarily, but that was not a bad play call by any means, in my opinion. There was so much room to the edge if he had kept the ball. So no, I mean,
they also get it. If that one defensive end doesn't completely, I think it was Hayes.
Right.
He was unblocked. Really.
If anything, it was execution, not the actual play call that hindered Michigan's opportunity there. Yeah. No, I mean, they finally kind of did what we were wondering if they could do it. And that was set up the play action pass. And it was a huge success for them. The thing with me is like, you know, and this is what we'll never probably really know, or maybe we'll know at some point, but is, you know, the makeup of the actual, of the quarterbacks, all of them are so much different. You know, it's like, I've always been big on like what gets, you know, some quarterbacks don't necessarily even need to get into a rhythm. Some quarterbacks can just walk out. You can run the ball 10 times, and then when he's asked, he'll throw it. Some guys maybe need a few easy completions. You know, it felt like Michigan, like you said, I think like it was nothing outrageous or like out of left field that Gattis did yesterday, but by maybe using the deep ball a little bit more, I think it played to McNamara's strengths and it made the rest of the game a little bit easier for him. Cause that's one area where he's looked really good in throwing the ball down the field. you know, and the short passes are pretty solid. It's the intermediate stuff, I think, where he struggled a little bit. But, you know, they were able to kind of get his confidence up using that deep ball, and then building the confidence of the receivers, you know, like going back to that, the long catch from Wilson. I think that's a confident, that individual play is a confidence builder. He can go up and, you know, make a play on his own. So no, overall, I thought the offensive game plan was excellent. Couple red flag, you know, the one thing, I guess, and I saw a couple of people on the board talk about this last night and this morning, I wonder maybe what you think, is I think the red zone offense still, maybe there are a few kinks there that they need to work out. They've shown a consistent ability to make big plays, but inside the 10-yard line, you know, I think there's maybe still a little bit of inconsistency there. I still don't think they throw the ball enough in those situations. Ironically, when they did yesterday, it was a touchdown. Felt like they still rely on the run really, really heavily down there. So again, maybe nitpicking a little bit, but if there is one little thing that maybe stood out to me that on the negative side, it's that I still think they have some kinks to work out in the red zone.
Yeah, to me, I'd like to see them struggle in the red zone against not Wisconsin, because I mean, Wisconsin's going to stop the run. That they know how to do that, and I think Michigan went into this game expecting it to be more of a 20-14 game, and in that kind of game, a field goal is really valuable. I mean, just not turning the ball over and ensuring that you get a field goal, that's a fine red zone offense against a team like Wisconsin on paper. Could they have been more creative? Oh, definitely. But was it worthwhile in the moment for them to, because I'm thinking about like that punt fumble, like that gift that they got. And I believe the second fumble that they got, both of those were situations where you're thinking, oh, they can really make this a blowout type game if they score a touchdown, but they settled for field goals both times. If it struggles against a team that doesn't stop the run that well, then I think there's a lot more to it. I kind of just feel like Michigan was like, any time, like any drive that ends in points is a success in this game. And I think their thought was, don't risk getting a ball tipped and turning it over. Cause remember both 2017 and 2019, they turned the ball over in the end zone against Wisconsin and it cost them touchdowns. And so I think there's a little bit of maybe aversion to the turnovers in the red zone. So something to think about, but I'm not overly concerned. And by the way, you're really right about Cade McNamara's deep ball passing. His passer rating on passes of 20 yards or more downfield, this is the rating that goes up to 158.3. So the NFL rating, he's at a 130.2. On passes 10 or more yards downfield, he's at 120. So, yeah, it's really the middle stuff that he struggles with, weird as that is.
Think about that. That's such a potential recipe for success when we talk about how well Michigan has run the football this year, right? I mean, there are opportunities aplenty for them to make big plays if you can run the football that successfully and you have a quarterback who's shown exceptional accuracy and throwing the ball deep down the field. And they, obviously we know they have the athletes. You gotta be right. You gotta be excited if you're Gattis, the rest of the offense, thinking like those are two really big, big things that can make an offense very difficult to stop.
Yeah, I agree. They should just run the flea flicker on the first couple drives of every game. See what happens. Anyways, we're going to hit a quick break on the other side. We're going to talk about changed expectations for the rest of the season, along with a peek of what is to expect from the Wolverines this month. This is the Wolverine 24/7 podcast.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back. Thanks for waiting. So, Steve, I'll let you go first on this. Did this win change your expectations for the rest of the season? I know we kind of asked that, some variation of that question every week, but this week was a little different. I mean, they snapped the underdog losing streak of 18 games that dated back to 2013. They beat Wisconsin on the road. I know they haven't played, it's only five straight losses there, but it's been a place that has been difficult, and it was a legit road atmosphere. Do you come away from this weekend with a changed outlook on the Wolverines?
Yeah, I think this is maybe the weekend that it's fair to start to raise the ceiling, just because we're not just seeing the guys that we thought would play well for Michigan play well. We're seeing other guys emerge, other guys that we know are very talented too, guys that have high ceilings. You know, I think that goes a long way. You know, like you talk about Ojabo, like I said, could be like his emergence could be the difference in a win or two for them, just because Hutchinson has shown to be so unstoppable, you know. So I have to say so. You know, the flip side though for Michigan is their schedule, as difficult as it looked before the season began, somehow looks maybe even more difficult than it did. Michigan State looks legit. Nebraska, my trap game, looks like a potential trap. I don't think it's a trap game. I don't even think it's a trap game anymore. I think it's another tough road test back to back.
Yeah.
Maryland pretender. I mean, I still can't believe I saw that graphic where like four of the five like CBS guys picked Maryland to cover and win against Iowa. Like, the hell are you? How in the hell is that even a thing? Northwestern, not very good. Penn State, I undersold Penn State a little bit. Nice. Their defense, I think, has got a few star players on it. So this could end up being one of those seasons where Michigan is maybe one of the 10 or 12 best teams in the country, but they still lose two or three games in the regular season just because, I mean, but you have Ohio State, Michigan State, Penn State, Michigan are all in the top, going to be in the top 15 this week, all in the same division.
Yeah.
So,
and two of them are road games.
Yeah.
Michigan.
Yep. Yeah. So, I mean, it's yes, because a lot of what we like, sort of what we've talked about coming out of this game, the biggest thing for me with Michigan, and I know that the Penn State Wisconsin game was a season opener. A lot can happen in the season opener, but you know, Wisconsin is 1-3, but Michigan beat them way more impressively than both Notre Dame and Penn State, in my opinion. I mean, they're up by four touchdowns in the fourth quarter, whereas Wisconsin had legitimate chances. Now, maybe not so much against Notre Dame, but I mean, they were ahead in the fourth quarter in that game.
Yeah, they were.
Right. They had multiple opportunities to beat Penn State. So, you know, I do a little bit of the transitive property there and say that I think we have to raise the expectations for Michigan going forward. I think they would be raising their own expectations. Although they, if you're them, you're always going to have high expectations, but you understand, sure. You understand what I'm saying. So, but yeah, no, I think so. If not now, like when, what are you waiting for to, you know, do we wait saying, oh, well, now they have to go to East Lansing and beat Michigan State to say that this team is legit. Well, that, at that point, they'd be what, 8-0? You know, it's like how far, right. like okay, well, they're 12-0.
They I'll raise Ohio the State. Expectations they'll, when they get there.
Yeah, we'll finally raise the expectations. Like, no, absolutely. It was a complete, they look solid, they look crisp and low, that not mistake free, but not mistake prone in all three phases of the game right now. And that's something you can travel with. And it's something they play a type of football right now to me that is going to give them a legitimate chance in every game.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they're a little bit more blowout proof than maybe they were in 2019 or 2020. That was actually one of my takeaways. I think the mental mistakes are really impressive. I mean, zero defensive penalties yesterday and only two real offensive penalties either. I mean, and they were very much forgivable. You know, low penalties. There's very few plays where we just have no idea what they were doing, you know, from a player to player perspective. I mean, that's the real juice of being a good college football team is, can you play assignment football? Can all 11 people make the right play or the smart play? Even if they don't make the best play, like, are they roughly doing what their job was supposed to be on that snap? And Michigan, I think, is doing a lot of that. I mean, it reminds me of 2016 in that sense where it just seems like there's a lot of mental consistency at all positions. Also, hard not to look at the energy of the team and also think of the 2015-2016 teams. I mean, this is a team of a lot of guys who were part of last season's team. In fact, I think I counted at one point like 18 or 17 of the primary 22 starters last year are back. So this could have gone in a lot of different directions, but for them to have kind of the positivity, I think after this game, I do buy into the culture changes because it's a road game. We spent a little bit of time outside their locker room yesterday and everyone saw the jump around video that went viral. I think there's more legitimacy to it. When they say it in August, I'm kind of like, okay, you know, they're blowing smoke. When they say it in September, I'm like, okay, well, every team that's 3-0 loves their culture and loves the vibe around their team. When you go on the road and win a game as an underdog, and you're doing it in the engaged, energetic, positive fashion that you are, then a cynical reporter like myself starts to buy in a little bit. So I've changed my expectations. I mean, I'm not predicting them to do this, but I think it's a fair bar, meaning if they reach it, it's a successful season. If they don't reach it, it's a minor, at least a minorly disappointing season. My new bar is New Year's Six Bowl. My bar before the season started was 8-4. But I think New Year's Six is very much possible. You bring up a great point about their style of play. This defense is good. I mean, it's a really good defense. They're not, you know, Ohio State has a really good offense. I think Penn State continues to have a pretty successful offense, but this is a defense that's going to keep them in games. And I think it's an offense that's going to win them a couple close games. You know, I think about yesterday's game. It was close, defensive battle, and then the offense just kept making plays. So, yeah, looking at this month, I think you're right. Nebraska and Michigan State are going to be tougher than maybe – I think those were our two trap games. I don't think either of them are considered trap games anymore. We were too correct in calling them trap games, and now they're just big road games. But I think it's absolutely – I think the floor of this team is – arguably 8-4, thinking about home against Northwestern, home against Indiana, and at Maryland. Gotta think Michigan feels pretty good about those games and should feel good about those games. And then it's just the house money, Nebraska, Michigan State, Penn State. But especially with Nebraska and Michigan State, I don't think they do anything. And they're a little bit more functional offensively, but defensively, do they do anything better than Wisconsin? Not to my knowledge. So it's really just about keeping that mental stability, mental consistency. At some point, I got to think the turnover luck is going to change, right? I mean, they only have one turnover. It was an Alan Bowman interception late in the fourth quarter when they're up 4 touchdowns. They're not going to go the whole season with only, you know, like 1 or 2 turnovers. But I think the one other thing I would bring up about the culture and the energy is when things went wrong on Saturday, Michigan bounced back. I mean, the defense coming up with that third down stop to open the second half after the first half ended so terribly. Because really, they were a pass interference call that I think everyone can agree was missed, away from that being, they were down at halftime. I mean, they were one call away from that, where I think, you know, or Wisconsin probably could have converted a touchdown if they'd gotten that pass interference call like they probably should have got. So 2 drives in a row where they really struggled, but then they answered right back, forced a couple more 3 and outs. The offense, I think, you know, came away with another statement drive to open the second half. So yeah, I've changed my expectations. Last question I can think of, Steve, is there anything Michigan heading into this week against Nebraska needs to be very worried about, or any cause for concern, either on Nebraska's end or on Michigan's end, that would be at the top of your figure it out list in practice this week?
I mean, for Michigan, I think the biggest thing is, actually, here's one thing about yesterday's game that was interesting to me. Was the stadium like only like 3/4 full? Or was
it? No, it eventually got full. I've mentioned this before. Everyone keeps talking about Wisconsin like it's Penn State atmosphere-wise, right, or like it's Ohio. It's not. It really isn't. They don't have the culture. I remember I was at a game that was game day was there. And Wisconsin was 11-0. And I was like, it's a better atmosphere than like your Indiana's, Maryland's, Purdue's. I would say it's worse than Iowa, though. I don't think it's like, the student section takes forever to fill up because they have ushers assign you general admission seats as you come in. So like for it to look full, it has to legitimately be 100% full. But you know, even the rest of the crowd, there were open seats. It was a sellout in the sense, or it was effectively full, but it did take a quarter and a half. And that's where the 11 a.m. starts. That's a bummer. I mean, if Michigan was kicking off at 11 a.m., I can't even imagine, you know, what some of those games attendance would be, but it's a raucous environment, but it's not, I'd put it like 5th or 6th in the Big Ten. It's not like,
I would put Nebraska higher.
Having not been there,
I
agree. They have a bigger crowd and they have a more energetic, rabid fan base.
So that's with it. I mean, they demolished Northwestern last night. I think, their season is not maybe necessarily overall is not going to end up panning out the way fans thought it would go going into their season, but maybe that confidence is starting to build. I mean, I think the atmosphere next Saturday is going to be a lot more difficult than yesterday was.
Night game.
Like I said, it's almost kind of building up the way that I said it would before the season, is that you knew this was going to be, I mean, even though it hadn't been announced at the time, this had night game written all over it for Nebraska. And that this would be and now with Michigan being undefeated and possibly top 10, right? I mean, we're thinking, how many teams ahead of them lost yesterday? this is like the this is an opportunity for that big signature home win for Scott Frost and Nebraska. So Adrian Martinez looking to be playing a little bit better than he was earlier in the season. I think their defense has been pretty good. Even in that opening season opening loss to Illinois, I thought their defense flashed a few times for sure. So that's the part of it. If I'm Michigan, I think that's something you're really kind of looking at going into the game. On Nebraska's side, and I haven't looked too hard into Nebraska, I think this is a game where Michigan could win both on both sides of the trenches for sure. And again, we know on the road that just, you know, having an effective offensive line, an effective defensive line, it's like defense in basketball. It travels. You can pack it up in a bag and take it with you everywhere. It's going to work. So that's one area where I feel like Michigan should have an advantage. I think that the stuff for Michigan might be more of the intangible stuff just because, yeah, Nebraska coming off a big win. It's going to be a sold out house guaranteed, and it's going to be raucous, at least for that first quarter and a half or however long until you kind of get into the meat of the game.
Yeah. I mean, for those that want a glimpse of how impressive Nebraska's fan base is, their basketball team gets more attendance than Michigan's basketball team. And their basketball team is terrible. I think they're the only Power Five team in the country that doesn't have an NCAA tournament win ever. And even in their down years, they still have like crowds of 10 to 15,000. It's very impressive. And, you know, just a very, I guess, engaged fan base. They'll be loud. Like if Cade McNamara starts 4 of 9, or they give up or Nebraska gets a couple sacks, it'll be a lot louder than it would have been at Camp Randall Stadium. And especially, you know, night game, I think Nebraska fans really hate Michigan. Wisconsin fans do too, but they face each other every year. It's a little bit more routine. Michigan hasn't been in Nebraska since 2012. I'm sure they're excited for that game, especially having put together a few good performances in a row. Yeah, I think for me, I think the passing game still has to improve. Even though I said that they can win without the run or without as much in the run game, the pass protection issues early on, that it's twice in a row that there's been some difficulty picking up creative blitz concepts. I'll just put the umbrella there. Wisconsin got a little creative, especially on the inside, got a few quarterback pressures. McNamara did a nice job of avoiding sacks, but at some point teams are going to start hitting home on those. I have to think. And then the receivers, not just the drops, but also the not catching the potentially catchable balls, I think is something that has to improve. And some of that's on McNamara. I'm not saying he's amazing, but I think both parties have to continue to build that timing, because I don't think Michigan's going to run for 300 yards on very many Big Ten teams. And I got to think Nebraska's approach will be stop the run and make McNamara do it twice. You know, even though they did well throwing the ball on Saturday, I don't think they struck fear into too many Big Ten defensive coordinators' scouting reports. They're not like suddenly circling all these guys in red as you know, game breaking players. It was a quality passing game. It wasn't an elite passing game. So got to think Nebraska will try to stop the run. We might sell out a little bit more than Wisconsin was able to, or Wisconsin had to. And so it'll be game on again. We'll see what Michigan has. Anyways, for Steve Lorenz, I'm Zach Shaw. Be sure to check out all of our stories over at themichiganinsider.com, michigan.247sports.com. Have some takeaways, some look at where Michigan ranks now, stories about kind of the culture, the energy, the defense. Lots already up and lots to come throughout Sunday and Monday. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. Hope you had fun. Hope you learned something. We'll see you next time.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount+.